And the Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Command the children of Israel that they bring unto thee pure oil olive beaten for the light, to cause the lamp to burn continually in the tabernacle of the congregation. And it shall be a statute forever in your generations. The Eternal Light. The National Broadcasting Company and its independent affiliated stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Our program today is the last of a three-part series based on the writings of last year's winner of the Nobel Prize for Literature, Nelly Zaks, an honor which she shared with the Israeli writer Agnon. Guest commentators are Dr. Vera Lachman, professor of classics at Brooklyn College, and Spencer Holst, author and translator, heard today in his well-known role as a reader of poetry. Also reading from the works of Nelly Zaks, you will hear Marion Seldes, the narrator, Norman Rose. Written by Virginia Mazur, here is Nelly Zaks, poet of the Holocaust.
Erde, Planetengreif, du saugst an meinem Fuß, der fliegen will. O König Lear, mit der Einsamkeit im Arme.
This is the voice of the poet Nelly Zaks herself, reading from her own works in German. A refugee from Nazi Germany, living for the past 25 years in Stockholm, the 75-year-old Nobel Prize winner has been hailed as the chronicler of Jewish fate in our time, the poet of the Holocaust, but also a voice of forgiveness, of deliverance, of peace.
Da du dich drehst und drehst auf deiner Sternenstelle, Milchstraßenbettler mit dem Wind als Blindenhund.
Dr. Lachman, you told us on an earlier program that you knew Nelly Zaks personally.
Yes. Many years ago in Germany, during the Nazi years, since then I have kept in touch with her by correspondence.
Was it a great surprise when you learned that your old friend had won the Nobel Prize?
Yes, in one sense it was. We all knew that Nelly had greatness in her, but she did not seek recognition, did not want it. There was always this otherworldly quality about her. She was frail, soft-spoken, shy as a doe. When I knew her, she was living with her aged mother, almost a recluse, and this continued after her flight to Sweden. When her mother died, her last link with the here and now has gone. She was writing on the edge of consciousness and never seemed to care if her works were read or not. Her poems were simply inspired outbursts, and the higher the crest of her verse rose, the less were they addressed to a public. Almost against her will were her latest poems and plays wrested from her and shown to the world.
It is true, isn't it, that most of Miss Zaks's work deals with the fate of the Jews in our times?
Yes and no. Her earlier poems were romantic, with a bitter, sweet, nostalgic quality, resembling folk tunes. Those poems she has now withdrawn from publication. After her flight from Germany, her first volume deals specifically with concentration camps. She called it In the Habitations of Death. In it, Israel's body goes up to heaven in smoke. The knife of parting cuts the child from the mother, and terrible wardens take the place of mothers. The old man's last breath has been stolen away, the salt of despair squeezed from their dry eyes.
I think we should keep reminding ourselves, however, that when Miss Zaks speaks of Israel, which she does again and again, she's referring not to the specific state or country, but rather to the idea of Israel as it has existed for thousands of years. Her use of the word is much like that of the prophets and psalmists, but she extends it further to embrace the invisible universe and all of mankind.
That's true. It is this relatedness to the cosmic, or to the invisible universe, as Mr. Holst has said, that sets her poetry apart. For instance, in the poem, But Who Emptied Your Shoes, she starts with the specific shoes left by the victims outside the gas chambers. SS guards empty the sand from the shoes. These grains of sand symbolize Israel's thousands of years of homeless wanderings in the desert. But mixed with the sand are the crumbled parts of former creatures and human beings. Every handful of sand contains the past of the world. Even the fingers of the SS guards who empty the shoes are woven into the eternal process. The hands of today's masters and torturers will die, decay, crumble to dust, to sand in the wandering shoes of tomorrow. As we hear the poem read, listen to the repetition of the word sand and the word mingled, which become for us the sound of sand sifting through fingers.
But who emptied your shoes of sand when you had to get up to die? The sand which Israel gathered, its nomad sand. Burning Sinai sand, mingled with throats of nightingales, mingled with wings of butterflies, mingled with the hungry dust of serpents, mingled with all that fell from the wisdom of Solomon, mingled with what is bitter in the mystery of wormwood. Oh, you fingers that emptied the deathly shoes of sand, tomorrow you will be dust in the shoes of those to come.
Dr. Lockman, you spoke earlier of Nellie Zox's poems being written on the edge of consciousness. This dreamlike quality of a world within a world is certainly conveyed in the poem that we just heard.
Yes. And as in a dream, any demarcation line between animate and inanimate existence is missing. A beryl stone can become the leading character in a play. Rocks, stars, trees sing choruses. The fish lying on the kitchen table is the king of pain. There are no metaphors in the usual sense. Rather, the whole poem becomes a metaphor. As the sand becomes the whole of mankind in one poem, so in another, God is in the eyes of Susie the cow, and a black lung opening and closing at each breath becomes the arc of the future.
I believe that Nellie Zox's poetry underwent a complete metamorphosis after her flight from Germany. Would you say that she had become obsessed with the sufferings of her people?
It was more than obsession. It was beyond rationality. She somehow became their suffering. She incorporated it into her own being and relived it.
Except for her mother. Most of her family had perished, had they not?
Yes, they were all gone. And just before she left Germany, she learned of the death of her fiancé in a labor camp. He had been forced to carry stones, pave with them, then tear up his own work and do it all over, again and again until he died, from exhaustion, bleeding, frustration. Nellie sees in these stones a point in the universe that had been exposed to sun and night and forms a link in the nameless chain of evolution.
Stones you carried, you paved, and broke up again the font of wounds. And again you carried. That was the way, the death-commanded martyr's way. You lifted onto your shoulders a point in the universe in which human speech sleeps the day through. And delicate as a soul, the sun loses its gold. In your hands, you took the stone.
Following this tragedy of her fiancé's death, alone and in a strange country, the poet experienced another death, her mother's long, slow dying, with Nellie watching at the bedside by day and reliving at night the death watch in her writing. The line of communication is thin as a hair, alive as a hair. It draws and bends the poet forward toward the dying one. She longs with deep thirst to kiss, to touch, to meet the partner. Over the sunset, night thrusts a gangplank as from a boat, which she tries with hesitant feet. Will it carry her over trembling death into the strange peninsula?
line like living hair drawn death, night obscured from you to me. Reined in outside, I bend thirstily to kiss the end of all distances. Evening throws the springboard of night over the redness, lengthens your promontory, and hesitant, I place my feet on the trembling string of my death already begun. But such is love.
Nelly Sachs also lays bare in the poems of this period the dissolving of the dying person into the elements. As once she had emigrated to a foreign country, there's a second emigration imminent in the extremity of the last illness, an emigration into the cosmos. The elements of water, fire, earth want to leave the finite form, and while the breath exhales, the fourth element, air, leaves. The eagle of longing rules the hour at last, tears the victim apart to bear it home. Home to its nest, home to God.
Extremity is seeking its self-exile, and the heart of the water, and the demoniac astonished light of fire, the flowering births of earth and air, which in a song escapes the breath. Longing is the ruler. The invisible eagle tears its prey apart and bears it home.
In a long poem, Chorus of the Rescued, Nelly Sachs conveys the shock, the guilt of being alive, saved, as she had been saved from Hitler's furnaces.
She also expresses in that poem the dumb amazement at the random selection of survival. Those almost victims make up an odd citizenry. She pleads, bear with us. Don't frighten us with helping us too loudly and quickly.
We are grateful, she tells us, but our flight is not over the moment we put our feet upon the soil of a new country. Our brittle existence may disintegrate at any moment. That brings a memory of the past, the song of a bird, the bark of a dog, the glare of the sun. Already our consciousness has sought refuge with God.
We, the rescued, from whose hollow bones death had begun to whittle his flutes, and on whose sinews he had stroked his bow, our bodies continue to lament with their mutilated music. We, the rescued, the nooses wound for our necks still dangle before us in the blue air. Our glasses still fill with our dripping blood. We, the rescued, the worms of fear still feed on us. Our constellation is buried in dust. We, the rescued, beg you, show us your sun, but gradually. Lead us from star to star, step by step. Be gentle when you teach us to live again. Lest the song of a bird or a pail being filled at the well, let our badly sealed pain burst forth again and carry us away. We beg you, do not show us an angry dog. Not yet. It could be that we will dissolve into dust before your eyes. For what binds our fabric together? We whose breath vacated us, whose soul fled to him out of that midnight long before our bodies were rescued into the arc of the moment. We, the rescued, we press your hand. We look into your eye. But all that binds us together now is leave-taking. The leave-taking in the dust binds us together with you.
I understand, Dr. Lockman and Mr. Holst, that Nelly Sachs's poetry has been compared to that of the prophets, particularly Jeremiah, and that others have found that her imagery stems from the Kabbalah. Now, for that reason, could she properly be classified as a Jewish poet?
I really think the term is too limiting. True, the Jewish element permeates all her writing, and her entire work can be called religious. Yet one would not want to circumscribe her this way, just as one would not call Jeremiah a Jewish writer. He belongs to all ages and all people.
Because of the time she lived through, I think, the fate of the Jews in Europe became a framework for her writing. Up to 1960, her poems were essentially lamentations, dedicated to my dead brothers and sisters. But later, the Jewish fate becomes only one instance of human suffering.
Before we take up her last poems, Mr. Holst, which I think mark a departure from her writings of the 1940s and 1950s, I think we should consider some of the elements that have caused her to be described as the poet of the Holocaust. For one thing, she shows deep concern for the hatred which the Jews have aroused in the past and still do. It may be, she ponders, because the Jew is essentially a stranger. His high origin is hard to discover in the survivors of today. Yet, as the moon attracts the waters, there is a magnetic power that keeps calling him from the visible material present to a metaphysical distance. Something is sensed as odd in his song. It does not chime in with others. His friend is the bleeding sunset, and there's lateness in his ethnic existence. The poet views the sum of Jewish history, from the biblical promises of blessings as numerous as the stars in the heaven and the sands on the beach. The journey moves through eons of tears to the last bend in the road under Hitler. There, the burning chimneys of the crematorium sent Israel's body billowing up to heaven. In our times, the death was so terrible that angels who came to the rescue hung with bleeding wings in the barbed wire. So the question remains unanswered.
Why the black answer of hate to your existence, Israel? You stranger from a star, one farther away than the others, sold to this earth that loneliness might be passed on. Your origin entangled in weeds, your stars bartered for all that belongs to moths and worms, and yet fetched away from dream-filled sandy shores of time like moon water into the distance. In the others' choir, you always sang one note lower or one note higher. You flung yourself into the blood of the evening sun like one pain seeking the other. Long is your shadow, and it has become late for you, Israel. How far your way from the blessing, along the eon of tears, to the bend of the road where you turn to ashes, and your enemy, with the smoke of your burned body, engrave your mortal abandonment on the brow of heaven. Oh, such a death, when all helping angels with bleeding wings hung tattered in the barbed wire of time. Why the black answer of hate to your existence, Israel?
In the poem Job, Nelly Sachs goes backward in Jewish history to find an answer. Job, who is only one of the great biblical figures to emerge in her work, is envisioned as a compass of sorrow, the center of the winds of pain. As Delphi was believed by the ancients to be the navel of the earth, so Job is the navel of suffering. His voice that has asked why is silent. No more speech is left to him than to a worm or a fish. But eternal justice will console the silent sufferer through the night by making a constellation to rise from his blood that shall in some far distant phase of the cosmos outshine the sunrise in red glory.
O you windrows of agonies, swept by primordial storms, always into directions of other inclemency. Even your south is called loneliness. Where you stand is the navel of pain. Your eyes have sunk deep into your skull, like cave doves, which the hunter fetches blindly at night. Your voice has gone dumb, having too often asked why. Your voice has joined the worms and fishes. Job, you have cried through all vigils, but one day the constellation of your blood shall make all rising suns blanch.
On an earlier program, it was mentioned that Nellie Zox's first wave of popularity came from the young, particularly the young of Germany. Even before the Nobel Award, she was called back to Germany to receive prize after prize. Isn't it something of a phenomenon that this so-called poet of the Holocaust has been so honored in the land where the Holocaust originated?
This is how I see it. The Nobel Award calls Nellie Zox a voice of forgiveness, of deliverance, and of peace. Nellie Zox is, however, foremost a poet. To her, the poet's responsibility is to throw upon those who suffer in darkness the light from the lamp of compassion. By identifying with suffering and experiencing the agonies of the unknown sufferer, the poet becomes God's means of giving voice to the silent. Being a Jew, she took upon herself the whole immense history of Jewish martyrdom, down through the ages, into her life, into her breath. Moreover, she extended this suffering into universal terms. She saw in the horror of persecutors chasing victims at Auschwitz an eternal happening, only exemplified temporarily by Auschwitz.
It was by putting the Jewish martyrdom into universal terms, I think, that she gave the young Germans not forgiveness, but catharsis, purification. Her first poems after her flight to Sweden were an outcry, a lamentation for the Jews. Later, the outcry is for all.
One of the essential elements, nearly always present in her poetry, is the shooting out of straight lines from the here and now into infinity of space and time, into the cosmos as well as into the past. A chimney smokes in a concentration camp and blackens a star. A death sigh of an old man arouses a cosmic storm. A cauliflower turns into a skull. An old porter in the basement of a schoolhouse, who sees of the world only the legs and feet of passers-by, is in reality Samson the judge, his hair the flaming sun. And finally, all suffering is reduced to the dying fish on the hook.
Here and there, the lantern of compassion can be shown to the fish, where the fishhook is swallowed or suffocation practiced. There, the star of anguish has grown ripe for redemption. Or there, where lovers hurt each other, lovers who are always close to dying.
For Nellie Zox, today has its roots in the creation of this earth. It has drawn the juice of its nourishment from millions of prehistoric and historic lives. What we do, what we are, points to the future of this world, and places subtle and wild responsibilities on our loneliness. It is wrong to hear in her poems nothing but the outcry of accusation. It is equally wrong to hear in them the peace offerings of forgiveness. Rather, she gives voice to the nameless, mute convulsions of victims. Murdered Jews, children sacrificed in Ur, the dying fish on the hook, also that ruthless forgetfulness will not wipe them out without a trace.
einsam ist der Mensch, sucht gen Osten, wo die Melancholia im Dämmerungsgesicht erscheint. Rot ist der Osten vom Herrn.
The voice of Nellie Sachs goes on. As part of the Jewish heritage,
in
part of the heritage of all mankind.
Dem peitschenden Blitz des Äquators zu vergehen. O höre mich, mit den Kindergesichtern der Cherubin zu verwelken am Abend. O höre mich, im blauen Norden der Windrose wachen zur Nacht, schon eine Knospe tot auf den Lidern. So weiter zur Quelle.
Eternal Light presentation today, Nellie Sachs, poet of the Holocaust, was written by Virginia Mazur and concludes the series honoring Nobel laureate Sachs. Cantor David Putterman sang the liturgical introduction. Our guest commentators were Dr. Vera Lachman, professor of classics at Brooklyn College, and Spencer Holst, author and translator. Also reading from the works of Nellie Sachs was Marion Seldes, the narrator, Norman Rose. We invite you to join us next week when The Eternal Light will present The Liquid Fire, written by John Vlahos. This is Jerry Damon. The Eternal Light, produced for NBC by Rhoda Grady, is directed by Kenneth McGregor. For the seminary, Dr. Ben Zion Boxer of the Forest Hills Jewish Center is program editor, Milton E. Krentz, producer, and Ruth Sussman, program coordinator. This weekly program is presented under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. This is the NBC Radio Network.